following podcast may contain spoilers, profanity, and views or opinions that may not be representative of the author's intent of the articles discussed. We don't always take ourselves or the subject matter seriously either. Listener discretion is advised.
The following is a Galactic Network podcast.
Welcome to the Alien Invasion number 220, recorded on Thursday, May 11th, 2017. I am Dave Nelson, and that is Anessa Moyens and Brad Ludwig. Coming up, 10 of America's must-see UFO destinations. BBC's making a Victorian-era War of the Worlds TV series, and how SETI plans to find alien life by 2037. Those stories, plus the sightings. Actually, there's only one of them, sighting, and our picks and warnings. Before all that, though...
Dave?
Huh?
Dave?
Huh?
Hey, Dave, what's the question?
Would you be a willing abductee if the aliens promised they pinky swore with you, cross my heart, hope to die, stick a needle in my eye, to take you into space and or to visit their home planet? Or really any other planet?
Why am I being abducted and what do they plan to do?
Okay.
What's the fine print, Dave?
Here's the situation. Yes. It's like one of those things. I don't know what to compare it with. But, okay, you make an arrangement. Say you're online one night. Boop-a-doop-a-doop. You're surfing around the internet. Find a web page. In search of, you're maybe on you're on Craigslist. In search of willing alien abduction participant. All right, you make the arrangements, you sign the contract, but in the fine print it says they can take you at any time without notice. So you could be lying in bed having the best dream ever, having the best sleep ever, but aliens can come to your house and abduct you and take you away because you agreed that you'd be willing to do this.
I just might. I'd have to get it in writing.
I was going to say, I ended up getting like altitude sickness at 10,864 feet or whatever Sandia Crest is in New Mexico. I don't know that it's a great idea for me to go into space.
Okay, here's some caveats. There's a couple of caveats here, all right? They're not going to do anything to you, okay?
No, I'm saying me physically. Like, yeah, I could handle going into space.
I'm just saying that's one of them. But the second one is a completely, it's not like an airplane or it's not like going up into the mountains, okay? Completely pressurized cabin. You're not going to feel the effects at all. They have the technology to wrap their ship with some kind of force field or some kind of technology that the people inside are not affected by traveling through space and or the atmosphere.
Would I be able to take a camera?
Sure, why not?
Because I feel like if I'm going to go all this way, then, I mean, I'd kind of like to have proof.
Pictures or it didn't happen.
Oh, get out of my head. I was just going to say that.
Yep. Yeah, I suppose.
All right. We have a winner. Pack your bags. We're going tonight.
In the news...
While you could spend your summertime beach bumming or exploring nature, maybe it's time to pursue another true American pastime, visiting weird UFO sites.
Sign me up. I went to Roswell for the UFO festival, so sign me up.
Yeah, well, I've been to Roswell, but I've not been there for the festival. I went to the museum. So anyway, although we, the popular mechanics folks, are a serious journalistic entity and would never support the extraterrestrial theory of UFOs, here are some suggestions for you as you make the cosmic trip of a lifetime. So first up, we have Kecksburg UFO. In 1965, Kecksburg, Pennsylvania, had its own Roswell when a bell-shaped craft blazed through the late afternoon before crashing into a nearby wood. Of course, it was immediately covered up by the military, or at least the legend goes, but not before the resident saw Egyptian-like hieroglyphs on the side as it was hauled off. In 1965, Kecksburg, Pennsylvania. Oh, apparently I copied and pasted twice. Woohoo!
that happens.
There was a protracted legal battle to find out what crashed in those woods. And strangely enough, Hillary Clinton campaign chairman John Podesta got wrapped up in the whole thing. Podesta has a long-standing interest in UFOs and has been advocating for the release of Kecksburg documents since at least 2002. Aliens, a failed Russian Venus probe, and even a Nazi aerospace vehicle have been implicated. But a Pittsburgh Post-Gazette article points to the research of two Mutual UFO Network, MUFON, members, points to an even more mundane explanation. A General Electric Mark II reentry vehicle, a spy satellite launched by the U.S. Air Force, went off course, crashing into the woods. Today, getting to the point, a replica sits outside a social hall with a gift shop on site. We mentioned Roswell, and that is on the list, but I feel like we've talked about Roswell so much on this show.
Roswell, just... Schmoswell. Move on.
Roswell!
Roswell! Roswell! So there's Roswell UFO Museum. As Dave mentioned, there is an annual UFO festival that occurs. It's July? I forget.
July.
And then going from Roswell, of course, you have to go to Area 51. So there's an Area 51 tour. Again, not really going to cover that a whole lot or at all. And so moving on to UFO Watchtower. In a tiny town called Hooper in south central Colorado, there's a platform built for staring skyward. According to the National UFO Reporting Center, New Fork, visualized here by Max Galka, and the link will be in the show notes, so you can check that out. The watchtower has actually yielded, quote, results, unquote, because the San Luis Valley in Colorado has been hotbed for reported UFO activity. The watchtower was an inevitability. Getting into the watchtower won't cost you an arm and a leg. A single admission fee is $2, a whole car is $5, and you can camp for $10. Be careful camping. Cattle mutilations have also been reported in the area, and I believe that was part of one of my picks about as a documentary about cattle mutilation.
Ooh, I like the sneak preview.
Ooh, no, I mean, this was like a pick from months ago.
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
I forget the name, but it involved cattle mutilation in the Southwest. Greater Green River Intergalactic Spaceport. That sounds pretty cool. In 1994, the Schumacher-Levy 9 comet crashed into Jupiter, sending up quite a few fireworks show in the solar system. The Green River Council, City Council in Wyoming, wanted to build a refuge for any Jovians wishing to flee, and thus rechristened their tiny blip of an airstrip the Greater Green River Intergalactic Spaceport. For the most part, though, it's been used by humans. Sadly, Atlas Obscura says the sign designating it the Intergalactic Spaceport has since been removed or stolen. Biestids. Next up, we've got the UFO Welcome Center in Bowman, South Carolina. A man named Jody Pendavaris built a trash castle monument to our alien overlords called UFO Welcome Center. Pendavaris allows visitors to his rickety outsider art project. The idea reportedly struck him in the 1990s, sort of like the Potato Devil's Tower in Close Encounters of the Third Kind, but made out of sheet metal. And by Memorial Day 1999, it was open for business.
I think I've heard about that place. I think it was on some like documentary show I watched.
Yeah, I feel like it might have been a small documentary on YouTube, but I think you have to climb up a ladder to get into it, if I recall correctly. Next, Little Green Men Festival. Whoop, whoop. A farm near Kelly and Hopkinsville, Kentucky, was the site of an ambush from above in 1955 when several goblin-like creatures reportedly descended on the house of Elmer Sutton. That Elmer fellow. By the time authorities arrived, the visitors were gone, though the occupants of the house were spooked by the encounter. These days, Kelly plays host to the annual Little Green Men Festival, which falls on the third weekend of August every year, the same time as the encounter 62 years ago. This year, the festival happens to fall on the same day as a total solar eclipse sweeping the nation on August 21st. Exciting! The same day as the alleged encounter. Coincidence? Let's see what happens in Kelly that afternoon in just a few months. In other UFO farmhouse-related news, McMinnville, Oregon, has its own UFO festival as well, aptly called UFO Fest. This year's event is set for May 18th through the 21st. McMinnville was the site of one of the most famous UFO photos ever taken.
Really?
Yeah, it was taken in 1950, and the photos were printed in Life magazine and in newspapers across the nation and are often considered to be among the most famous ever taken of a UFO. Most UFO skeptics have concluded that the photos are a hoax, but many ufologists continue to argue that the photos are genuine and show an unidentified object in the sky. Thanks, Wikipedia.
Did you go above and beyond the call of the article and actually look that up yourself?
I clicked the link that was in the article, which took me to the Wikipedia. Started going.
All right.
All right. Alien graves. In the 1890s, there were a rash of mysterious airship sightings. And, like all good hokum, some of those allegedly crashed to the ground, including in Max, Nebraska. The good people of Aurora, Texas, reported one such landing, and townsfolk did what they only thought was right, gave the dead occupants a burial in an unmarked grave. Some small-town papers of the time didn't quite have the upstanding journalistic integrity of the New York Times and would, from time to time, throw in a bit of made-up entertainment. That may well have been the case in both Max and Aurora, as subsequent investigations of the cemetery have turned up nothing.
Dum, dum, dum.
Oh, well. And next we've got Betty and Barney Hill. Won't go into the history too much,
yeah,
but
we've covered it pretty good on this show.
Yep. Long story short, Betty and Barney Hill were driving through the rural New Hampshire on the way back from Portsmouth when something happened. Aliens in the sky. And under hypnosis, the couple claims they were abducted by aliens, becoming one of the first widely publicized cases. Though the Hills have since passed away, New Hampshire has erected a historical marker of the couple's encounter with something. And last on the list, we have Futuro House.
No. Anessa, you have to say it like this. Futura House. House. See, I don't.
One more time.
Futuro House.
I love that so much. All right, continue.
In the 1960s, you didn't just have the chance to see UFOs in the sky. For the right price, you could live in one. The so-called Futuro Houses were a Finnish design meant to embrace modernity. Modernity?
That's modernity. A made-up word.
To embrace the modern life. But instead, were regarding as something more of an eyesore. A few of them still exist today. Atlas Obscura has a map of the homes that still exist, and some remain in better shape than others. And again, this story comes from Popular Mechanics, and I just thought that was kind of cool. And if people were, you know, maybe in one of these areas or looking to do something, little road trip during the summer, it'd be kind of cool to check some of these places out.
I think it's the perfect time to cover an article like this because vacation season is coming up very soon.
Yeah, we start planning.
And also, I think this is a great article because we learned things. We learned history. And
yes.
Geography, too. History and geography.
It's crazy. Learning all sorts of things.
Informational and educational.
Woo-hoo!
And we try to make it a little entertaining, too.
Yes.
You know.
A little bit.
Put our little...
But I can't say modernity. Modernity?
Modernity. That's hard. That's
modern life.
Okay.
Modern stuff.
So, question, if you guys are going on your ultimate UFO road trip across the good old US of A, and you only had the chance to maybe go to two of these, which ones would you check out?
I'd kind of like to see the Little Green Men Festival in Kentucky.
Sounds fun.
I think that would be kind of cool.
Yeah, I'd choose that one, and I would go to a town called Hooper and check out the UFO Watchtower. I keep thinking about Mr. Hooper from Sesame Street.
Oh, yeah.
And Big Bird would always get his name wrong. He's like, Hooper, Hooper!
If you have thoughts, feelings, or a strong opinion on the story that we just talked about, email aliens@gncasts.com. That's aliens@gncasts.com. Or call our voicemail number. Area code 805-328-3966. 805-328-3966. Thank you for your feedback.
Follow this Galactic Network podcast on Twitter, like our Facebook page, or subscribe to our YouTube channel. Find us by searching for Galactic Network on all the major social networks or click on the icons at gncast.com.
Since the last time we gathered together here to talk about aliens, what have you guys been up to? What happened the last week? I know you guys went to see a movie, but besides that, what else did you do?
It was Free Comic Book Day on Saturday.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So the whole day had a comic book theme. We went out we went to eat at our favorite little Mexican grocery store on Friday. And because they have like a little taco counter. And the owner was like, now we're starting to sell elote on Saturdays. And I was like, we're going back tomorrow. And so we went back to the next day. For more tacos.
What is elote?
I was going to talk about that.
Okay, thank you.
And while we were there, because we told him around the time that we were going to get there, he's like, okay, I'll try to have it ready by then. But it wasn't ready, and I was really sad. So elote is corn. It's corn. It comes in the form of on the cob or in a cup, but it is mixed, and it varies depending on where you get the corn. But it will have, like, mayonesa, so, like, mayo, some lime, chile, sometimes like a kind of a sour cream thing going on. They'll add like a hard cheese or something to it. It varies depending on where you get it. Some people put like hot sauce, like Valentina hot sauce on it. So like I said, it varies, but it's really good. And it's one of my favorite things to eat, which is probably why I don't make it at home, because I would just keep eating it. As we were leaving and already filled with tacos and Mexican soda, they're like, oh, it's ready. And I'm like, the lady goes, how many would you like? And I'm like, three. So I gave, you know, one for me, one for Brad, and one for our friend Rob, who had eaten this monster of a taco called the taco
arabe.
And it's basically a taco, but instead of like corn tortillas, it was with naan bread. So it was a fairly large taco, and it's got like this little mountain of meat and like avocado and like a, I think, chipotle sauce of some sort, cheese, cilantro, onion, and I think refried beans as well. It's this magical thing, and it's yummy, but you're incredibly stuffed by the time you're done eating it. And then I made him eat corn because I'm a terrible friend.
You're a food terrorist is what you are.
I am. You will eat this corn. And it's funny because he like finished the corn before I finished mine. He's like, that was really good. I'm like, yes, it is. After that, we drove down to Stevens Point, and we went to a comic book shop and picked up some comic books, free ones and ones for purchase. And then we went to go see Guardians of the Galaxy.
Nice.
And then we came back, and that was pretty much our day.
All right.
Sunday was fairly uneventful. And Saturday, we're going down to Oshkosh because I'm going to meet my niece's friend who's working for the next 2 or 3 months in Milwaukee and cool. Wants to meet me. So
neat. Cool.
Yeah.
We've had terrible flooding here. So I spent the weekend on the air talking about floods. So it kind of took a damper out of comic book day. I was going to talk about it. I think I mentioned it once on the air. We have a comic book shop right across the street from our station. So
nice.
It's a cool shop. I didn't go there for a comic book day, but I've been there before for it. It's really neat. And then I'm going home next week. So I'm pretty excited about that.
Woohoo!
By the time you listen to this show, I'll probably be back. Because we're recording a week before I go, and I won't have time. You'll get the show about 2 weeks after we actually recorded it. So next time we do it live, we will talk about my trip and all that stuff.
Nice.
BBC is making a Victorian-era War of the Worlds TV series. You guys probably saw this story this week.
I did. I'm pretty excited.
Yeah, it's super, super cool that they're setting it back in the era that the actual original story took place. Last week, BBC announced a number of new shows, including a three-part series based on H.G. Wells' novel, The War of the Worlds. The show is scheduled to go into production next spring, and it appears that unlike most modern adaptations, it will be set back in the 1800s. Or it could be 1900, because that's officially when Victorian era ended, was 1900. The series will be written by Peter Hartness, who adapted Susan Clarke's Victorian era fantasy novel, Jonathan Strange, and Mr. Norrell for the BBC, as well as a handful of Doctor Who episodes. I didn't look it up. I didn't see which ones he wrote for. Maybe one of you want to check that out while I read the rest of the
story. Checking it out right meow.
All right. It was first announced back in 2015. I think we talked about it back then.
Probably.
Yeah. And today's confirmation and production comes only months after the book entered the public domain. And that also rang a bell, because I think we mentioned that when this story first came up 2 years ago, that it was a planned thing that they were making this TV three-part series. I guess
miniseries?
Yeah, I guess in Britain that's not really a miniseries, because like
that's like a season.
It's a season for some shows.
I think they just call it series.
Yeah, series. The novel, in case you don't know, follows an unnamed narrator as he watches a series of shooting stars, which turn out to be vast metal cylinders containing Martian invaders. The aliens attack the assembled humans and begin a conquest of the planet, only to succumb to human diseases. Yeah, it's been done before in many, many ways, including the most famous, the radio play by H.G. Wells.
Orson Welles. Other Welles.
Yeah, in the 30s. And then it was done in the 50s, that really beautiful Technicolor movie. And then it's been done a few more times, including with Tom Cruise in the early aughts. But it's never been done before in its original time frame, which is the late 1800s. So that's pretty exciting. What'd you find out, Brad? Anything?
Yes. He wrote three episodes: Kill the Moon,
mm-hmm.
The Zygon Invasion.
Yep.
And The Zygon Inversion.
All pretty recent episodes.
Yes. He was a writer during the 2014-2015 season.
I'm sure that this will be made available somehow to us in some way or another. So,
oh, absolutely.
I'm sure that you guys will watch this once you can, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there's other ways, VPN, to watch it.
I have no idea what you're talking
BBC
about.
Player. iPlayer.
What?
Well, I'm kind of wondering if it'll end up being released through like PBS or something.
Yeah, that sounds about
right.
I
know they did that with Sherlock, and so we were able to stream that through PBS's app.
Yeah,
on the Roku.
That sounds about right. I think you're onto something there, Anessa. See, we put our heads together. We figured this out.
Make it happen, PBS.
If you like what you've heard on this Galactic Network podcast, please consider helping us out financially by going to gncast.com/support. On that page, you'll find links to our Patreon campaign where you can make a small recurring monthly pledge of as little as $1. Or click on our Amazon affiliate link, make a purchase, and we get a very small percentage from the sale. Again, go to gncast.com/support. And thank you for supporting the Galactic Network podcast.
I have an interesting story about SETI's plans to contact, well, not contact so much as find, I misspoke, alien life by 2037. Now, SETI, of course, the search for extraterrestrial intelligence, has encountered endless false alarms while scouring the universe for artificial radio signals. This has only made senior astronomer Seth Shostak want to break out every computing upgrade that either exists or will soon exist to rev up the search for life. Shostak recently talked aliens, not with aliens, talked about aliens, with the U.S. House Committee on Science, Space, and Technology, discussing the state of SETI efforts to identify life beyond Earth. If 2037 is too early, he's thinking 2040. He's quoted as saying, "I bet everyone a cup of coffee that we will find something. With two sugars and a splash of optimism," he stated this, though he backed that up just in case, "I may have to buy a lot of coffee." Finding signs of aliens will rely heavily on our own most supercharged technological advances. Shostak indicated that his planned experiment will need equipment powerful enough to survey around 1 million star systems for those sought after. There we go. Radio waves. What is available now would take us thousands of years to investigate such a broad expanse of space. But upcoming improvements will avoid the possibility of both us and our equipment turning to fossils before finding anything, if we find anything. While the fact that computer processors are ridiculously expensive is no alien concept under Moore's law, which predicts that every 2 years, the number of transistors on a circuit inevitably doubles. Processors will keep getting smaller and cheaper and faster at warp speed. Artificial intelligence could also be invaluable in searching for extraterrestrial intelligence. New types of machine learning are being developed by SETI scientists to pick up signals, which is now painfully limited because the current equipment can only seek out one particular pattern in the radio data transmitted to it. Of course, Shostak couldn't go without mentioning his interest in the TRAPPIST-1 system. Three of those seven planets are potentially habitable. He's quoted as saying, "TRAPPIST-1 and other recent discoveries represent the beginning of an era of exploration that, in the next 5 to 10 years, will allow us to identify truly habitable worlds and possibly life beyond Earth," said UC San Diego professor of physics Adam Burgasser, who is a member of the team that discovered the seven-planet star system. "These transformative advances addressing one of humanity's most persistent questions, are we alone, are fully achievable." And that article came to us from Blaster. You can check out the show notes and see the whole thing. We trimmed it for time, but there's a lot of interesting bits in there.
All right. I love Blaster.com, by the way. That's a great site. They cover a lot of different things.
Yeah.
Science fiction. Science.
And yes. Everything that's... If you're listening to this show, it probably is something you would be interested in as well.
Mm-hmm. He's got quite the sense of humor, doesn't he?
Yes. Absolutely.
Did he throw in that Star Trek reference? Wasn't there a Star Trek reference in there somewhere? He said warp speed.
That was the author that threw that in.
Okay. All right. Neat. Well, I hope that he's right by 2037 because I'd like to know before I die that we made alien contact. That'd be cool. I guess I won't. I'm not guaranteed to be dead by 2037. So it's how many years is that from now? That's 20 years, right?
20 years.
Yeah, I'll be 70. I'll be 70. Yeah, I'll be. You know, God willing, I'll still be kicking around.
How old are you, Dave?
Well, just do the math.
You're 50?
I'm 50, yes.
Huh, I didn't think you were that old.
Yeah, well, thank you.
Not that's old, but...
No, most people don't guess that I'm 50, which is really neat.
I know that sounds bad, but I'm like, that's not what I meant.
No, it's age. Age is a state of mind.
Age is nothing but a number.
it's also the one thing I have noticed since I turned 50 is, and this may have to do with the puppy dog, because we're always running around after it, is at a certain time every night, around 11:15 or so, I start falling asleep. And I can't stop myself. I literally cannot stop myself from falling asleep. And this is a very recent occurrence, and it's troubling is what it is. If you have thoughts, feelings, or a strong opinion on the story that we just talked about, email aliens@gncasts.com. That's aliens@gncasts.com. Or call our voicemail number, area code 805-328-3966, 805-328-3966. Thank you for your feedback.
Please identify the craft you witnessed.
A black, triangular, three-dimensional shape. Huge, just flying, hovering in it.
Shaped like almost like between an egg and like a teardrop.
Two long cylinder objects flying over me.
We had a dome. I could see the occupants in it.
It appeared to be rotating, and it was almost circular in disc shape, and it hovered for maybe about 5 minutes.
Let's talk about a possible alien craft entering our very own atmosphere. Are extraterrestrials visiting us? Or could it be swamp gas? Or maybe Venus? Possibly somebody's drunk? Let's find out. Let's find out from Anessa. Anessa, what's your sighting this week?
My sighting, well, I guess like the title would be Emerald Green Orb Puts on Light Show in Marietta, Georgia. So this occurred really recently. May 7th of this year. It was reported on the 8th, and it was posted to, where did I go? New Fork on the 11th. So I was looking through their recent posts and came across this one. The shape was a sphere, and the duration was about 6 seconds. The wife and I were sitting on our deck looking at the stars and the waxing moon. It was around 9 p.m. on a cool spring Sunday night. The sky was clear and cloud-free. The moon was at 95% full. I was looking over the roofline of my house towards the south and east. My wife was looking south and west.
Anessa, can I interject? Uh-huh. Can I interject real quick?
With my wife?
My wife? Okay, go ahead.
Okay. Suddenly, there is a flash of light over the roof line in my side of vision. It was an intense, luminous emerald green color. It looked like electrical sparks with arcing shades of current. It appeared to be 3 or 4 times larger than the moon. From the center of this matrix emerged what appeared to be a round or slightly oval orb with what looked like a lightning bolt trailing it. The short trajectory of the object curved at 180 degrees, like the letter C, and it stopped at that point. The trailing energy field that followed the orb was visually sizzling, no sound, like the fuse of a firecracker, and eventually subsided. The orb was standing completely still, motionless, at that point. If the moon was a basketball, this orb would have been a softball. I yelled at my wife to look at the object, and she stood up in time to see it begin to pulse and speed away. It shot into the tree line and disappeared. I have never seen anything move so fast from a dead stop. It seemed to me the pulsing of the object correlated with its rate of acceleration, as if the pulsing was a proponent of its propulsion. The angle of the sighting was at a 45 or 50 degree angle. It appeared to be moving laterally due south. My personal opinion is that this object is made a dimensional shift, like a car running off the road. The initial light show appeared to be a force field that had been breached. As the light stood motionless after its introduction into our world, it appeared to be to get its bearings and re-enter its original flight path. That's just my take. Or maybe it was here to stay. I hope to make a computer model in real time of the experience. This is something the wife and I will never forget.
Wow. How detailed. What a detailed account. And for only, what, 6 seconds?
Yeah. It's a lot of detail in 6 seconds.
I know.
And I'm like, I saw a light and it was green. And it moved really fast. And then it stopped. And then it moved really fast again. And then it was gone.
Well, it sounds like this person knows their stuff. Like it's...
I was going to say, I kind of wonder if they're maybe into science or science fiction or mm-hmm. just happen to have seen a lot of movies.
And probably is into some kind of animation, computer animation as well. It sounds like they want to make a stop.
Right.
Motion.
So they have some computer they have some animating skills and stuff. Mm-hmm. So, but no, I like the detail that was presented in this particular sighting.
Neat. So
some of them were like really vague, like, oh, I saw this thing and it was bright and then it like went away.
Just judging from the description, do you think it sounds legit?
I would say so, because there's nothing about anal probing.
Good point. Very good point.
You laugh, but if you ever go to like MUFON or New Fork and read their new like posts that they haven't gone through yet, like, oh my God, I thought I was abducted by aliens. My butt hurts.
Oh,
like
geez.
Just random comments like that. Well, and it's
the internet.
Like, stop. It's not funny anymore.
It's the internet. It's people just being stupid.
It's the internet. Yeah. So that would give it a little more legitimacy compared to some of the others. I know. But no, I like the description and I don't know. I would like to think that it happened. Because
mm-hmm.
my first thought was like a meteor coming in. So it'd be like a meteorite.
But when they described that it
stopped.
But then you
don't stop and it's not that big.
All right. I would like to see this. I'd like to see an object all of a sudden appear out of nowhere, stop, just motionless like this. I mean,
yeah.
The description sounds amazing.
I would like to see their animation when they're done.
Yeah. Let's contact this guy. Is there an email address on there?
No.
Okay. Right.
They take out the email addresses for privacy.
Damn it. Okay.
I know.
Well, if you're listening, guy, or is it guy?
I assume it's a guy. I mean, it could be a girl, although it's Georgia, so probably a guy.
Okay. All right. Not that we're making any kind of generalization.
I don't know. So it could be, you know, it could be a wife and a wife or a husband and wife. But yeah, if someone in Marietta, Georgia happened to have witnessed this and made an animation, could you send us the link?
Yeah.
Does the sound of the TARDIS get you all excited? Are you a fan of the longest-running science fiction show? Then for all your news and gossip, check out Who Knew and Review. You can find us at gncasts.com/TARDIS. Each week, we will run through a collection of stories from around the Hooniverse itself at gncasts.com/TARDIS.
Let's talk about our picks and warnings. These are things that we have entertained ourselves with, related somehow to aliens in one form or another. It can be, let's see, a short film like mine, a full-length film like yours, books, games, we've done apps before, anything alien-related. So mine was kind of last minute. I was running behind this week, and my go-to is always a short film. So I just went onto YouTube and typed in alien invasion short film. And what happened to come up that caught my eye was one that was called Embers and Dust. And funny enough, it actually relates to my story. I love how that works out.
What?
Mm-hmm.
My short film is, it takes place the night of Orson Welles' radio play based on War of the Worlds. And it follows this family. They seem to be out in the woods. They have a farm, and I think it's down south somewhere, because they show them, or they show one of the characters in like a diner, and other people are talking, and they have a southern accent. So I think it's down south somewhere. But they have a kid, and the kid is wandering out in the woods, and he stumbles upon an alien-like creature, sort of. It's like all glowy, sort of like, do you guys remember the very first episode of Star Trek The Next Generation? The, I forget what they called that being. The being that's powering Farpoint Station. And at the end, it gets set free, and the creature that comes out of the shell or whatever it is looks like this creature, and it's kind of got tentacles hanging down, sort of like what's described in the book and you see in different movies, adaptations of War of the Worlds, like those machines, but it looks like it's organically... It looks like it organically, like the machines that you see are probably like exoskeletons for actual beings that have those kind of tentacles things, sort of. But it's a small one out in the woods, and the kid runs into it, and it kind of goes back and forth between a flashback to when he's talking to his father about space. He's interested in space. And the present day, which is... He's in the woods. He stumbled upon this creature, this alien creature. And then in the background, you can hear Orson Welles' radio play of War of the Worlds, because people are listening to it and they're all freaking out. So it's really neat how it's taking place as the War of the Worlds radio broadcast is happening, but there's an actual alien. Like, I don't know if it's supposed to be this, it's actually happening. But then at the end, Orson Welles comes on and says, no, this was just fiction. Maybe it's like a coincidence that this alien showed up the night of that broadcast. But it's really neat. It's very well done. Like, it doesn't look like a amateur YouTube short film. It looks like a Hollywood style, really good looking period piece that looks like the 1930s. When the War of the Worlds radio broadcast took place. Like, it looks amazing, and I highly recommend. I'm going to give 5 effing flying saucers to this, because it's worth it.
What?
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. So, again, it's Embers and Dust, short film about the night of the radio play and an actual alien encounter in the woods.
Very cool.
All right, so you guys went to see Guardians of the Galaxy, and it's going to be your pick, but you're not going to be too spoilery, right?
Nope.
Okay.
Right.
So you're going to talk about it in generalities. Maybe it's okay to talk about things that we already know from watching the first one, possibly. Because I think most people have seen the first one.
Yep.
Okay. Go for it.
So we saw this movie called Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
Okay.
It was awesome.
Okay.
The end. No.
How many flying saucers?
150. No. We saw it on Free Comic Book Day last Saturday. And it continues the story of the Guardians characters. And their first job that they take, they do very well with, but Rocket kind of screws something up a little bit. And that a lot of the hassle and heartache that they have is kind of because of a decision that Rocket makes. We get a lot of character development in this film. We get to see how these people have kind of come together. And the theme is very much what is family? What is togetherness? What, you know, how does that work? And as we've seen in the trailer, Peter Quill, Star-Lord, actually gets to meet his father, whom he's often wondered about, you know, where he's from, if his mom was crazy because she always said that he came from the stars. So he gets to find out the truth. And they really do a great job kind of expanding the universe and kind of giving us a sense of scale to the universe is the only way I can explain it without giving anything away. They do. Stan Lee's appearance is wonderful, and we get the introduction of potentially important characters with the introduction, or with his scene. So that was really cool. That's pretty much all I can come up with in a nutshell. Anessa, do you have anything to add? Yeah, I don't want to give anything away.
The music? How's the music? The music was good, I'm guessing?
The music was great.
The way James Gunn uses music at the right points in time, to me, I have never viewed Fleetwood Mac's The Chain as a song that would be the opening to somebody opening a large can of whoop ass. But that is exactly what happens. Once The Chain starts up, you're like, oh shit, it's on. Here it is. It's coming.
Yeah.
Shoes drop.
The music in the Guardians movies are definitely a separate character. Like, he uses it like a plot piece, right?
Yeah, he does. And he definitely uses it to set the mood, to
connect scenes, bring out emotions,
and kind of reinforce where a character's head might be at that particular time. Now, we have, for the first two movies, there have been mixtapes. That has been the thing. When they do a job, they play one of Peter Quill's tapes. That just seems to be how it works. And at the end of the film, we've found a way to continue that kind of trend, but it might open up the music library a bit. And I don't want to say anything more than that, but it is hilarious if you know the history of what is done and how that is opened. It's a good funny moment. And for the love of all that is holy, people, sit through all of the credits, because there are 5 scenes to sit through.
Holy
not
crap.
Not one, not two, there are 5. And each one is either funny or is potentially a setup for either the next Guardians of the Galaxy film, or potentially what will happen, or a way that things can happen to bring the Guardians into Infinity War on Earth.
Yep. Because we already know that's happening. We already know that. Okay.
That's right. Not giving anything away. Okay. We know that the Guardians are going to be a part of it.
Oops. Okay. Did you have something to say, Anessa? I heard you go.
I don't remember now.
She was worried for a brief moment that I was going to say something.
No, I was actually going to say something in relation to the credits. But
oh, shoot. Was it a funny bit?
I don't know.
Ha ha, that Groot.
I don't remember. So anyway, no, it was a good movie. There's definitely some spots that hit you right in the feels.
Yep. Wow, once you see it, I would like to explain the importance of Sylvester Stallone's character. We know that he's in the film.
Okay.
And actually, there's a couple other cameos that you, I would tell you who it is, and you'd be like, oh, wow. And their relationship to that. So
I think I know what Sylvester Stallone's character is just from reading stuff online. I think I do. All right. So rate time. How many flying saucers?
What do you think?
4.5.
Yeah, I was 4.5 was actually the number in my head. Why 4.5?
I feel like
it needed another half an hour to kind of flesh out some things. I felt that they kind of pushed through.
Maybe. Okay.
That's probably a matter of editing, right?
Yeah. And, you know, maybe they're going to do a director's cut that might, you know, solve some of that. But
to me, like my half knocking off isn't so much like it needing to add some time, but I felt like they were really trying to pick up off of the momentum of the first movie. And so if you haven't seen the first movie, or if you haven't seen the first movie in a long time, like since it was last released, so, you know, a couple of years ago or so, then the, like, trying to pull you into the storyline at the beginning seems a little forced, I guess. Because to me, like, one of the things that you kind of enjoy about the first movie is you've got this dysfunctional family, essentially, that's always bickering and arguing and, you know, they're butting heads. They're learning to get along and stuff. And that continues in the second one. But I feel like it was a little too much. And then they try to, like, start tugging on the heartstrings. And you're like, I'm not really quite there yet emotionally for the movie. And so that was kind of like my complaint about it. But like the second half of the movie, I think really takes off and like has a stronger way of pulling you in, not just to the story, but like emotionally and everything. So that was kind of like my docking it off. But I mean, it was still a very fun movie. It was quite entertaining. It was enjoyable. Yeah.
First of three Marvel movies this summer. Because we have, before if Marvel hadn't made the deal with Sony, it'd be only two Marvel movies this summer. So yay.
Yep.
All right. I'm looking forward to seeing it. I don't know when I'm going to see it. I may see it on vacation. We'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, please do. And actually, you know, if you saw it in 3D, if you don't get motion sick or whatever, I think that the way it was shot, the 3D wasn't an afterthought. It was actually planned in part of the design of the film.
That's awesome. I love when they do that. Okay, cool. All right.
Please subscribe to this Galactic Network podcast by going gncast.com/subscribe. Or search iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, or anywhere podcasts are offered.
That's going to do it for this edition of The Alien Invasion, a Galactic Network podcast. If you'd like to read more about the stories that we did talk about on this episode, click on the links in the show notes. And our thank yous go out to Monkey Warhol for providing our intro music, the song called Alien Syndrome. You can find all his stuff at soundcloud.com/monkeywarhol, just like Andy Warhol, but with monkey. Also, Retward von Dernberg, a composer from Germany, for our closing song called Be Water. His address is The Caravel, thecaravel.net. And also, thanks to Ben Olson.
Ben!
For recording our disclaimer audio at the start of the episode, benolson.com is his site. Thanks for joining us, everybody. And before we leave, final thoughts, Brad.
I really want to get this Lindbergh Area 51 UFO replica model kit.
All right.
It's only $29.99, and there's 13 left in stock.
For our friends who are checking us out on the YouTubes, here is what It looks like it's an old kit.
Oh.
But it's still available, and it's a flying saucer, and it looks amazing. It's 1/48th scale.
Looks like there's stuff inside, too.
It does. It looks like there might be a couple of aliens inside flying the craft.
Only $30. That's a fantastic price.
And if you have Amazon Prime, get it in 2 days, free shipping. Boom.
We also have a model need to finish putting together.
Yes, we do.
It's an alien, also from Lindbergh.
Yep.
Peeps.
You guys should really do YouTube videos of you guys putting these together. That would be awesome.
It'd be more of like, ah, damn it, Kit, get down.
Yeah,
go away, Kit. That would be the entire video.
All right, never mind then.
Because, like, Furlock would be like, why aren't you paying attention to me? Oh my God.
I will glue your ass to this UFO.
And then Irene would, like, put her claws in our knees and be like, meow.
Oh, yeah. I mean, our cats are adorable, but
they're so needy.
They hate if you're not paying attention to them, because how dare you?
Mm-hmm. That sounds like my puppy dog, too.
Yep. So, yeah, that would be the entirety of the YouTube video.
It's like you can't wait for the time that they're sleeping, because then you can get stuff done, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Anessa, what's your final thought?
I don't know.
Okay. You don't have to have
something.
I hate
looking for flights.
It's true. We're in the process of...
We're airfare shopping.
Yeah. Let me say by we, I mean Anessa.
Yeah, no.
First off.
Yeah, it sucks.
Because I'm not a flyer, and I trust Anessa's judgment in comparison shopping, flying more than I would my own. And so that's been... It's been a lot of, hey, check this out. What do you think of this itinerary?
And what about this one? What about that one? And it's one of those things where, like, I've booked so many flights for so many different people. I find it hard to do it for myself.
Well, good luck.
Thanks.
That's all I got to say. All right. Thanks for joining us, everybody. And until next time, we'll talk to you later.
Okay, bye.
This has been a Galactic Network podcast. For more, go to gncast.com. That's GNCAST.com.